Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 20th, 2023, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful, rainy Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You can also check out my Facebook page and Instagram at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Okay, more updates on my healing process. Yeah, remember that song from the 80s? Two steps forward and two steps back. The rest of it doesn't make any sense, but the two steps forward and two steps back does apply. Unfortunately, let's talk about something that happens when you have, I don't believe I have chronic fatigue syndrome, but I have something. It's somewhere between the post-vaccine syndrome, Lyme disease, and migraines. And the migraines can be a result of the post-vaccine and the Lyme disease. I don't know that I'm truly a migraineur because I never was growing up. But one of the things that these conditions can give you if you have them over time is mitochondrial dysfunction. So the mitochondria are little organelles inside all of the cells in your body, and they run your electron transport chain. So they run all of the energy systems of your body. The electron transport chain is like the spark plugs for energy in your entire body. So if they run down, things can happen. You can get tired. You can have exercise intolerance. You can get migraines if you're prone to them. I didn't think I was prone to migraines, but I'm starting to wonder. And so that's the latest thing I'm doing. I'm treating myself as though perhaps I have migraines. And so how might I do that? So first of all, I'm still continuing to treat for Lyme disease. I'm still taking antibiotic. I'm taking amoxicillin plus oregano oil plus a bunch of probiotic, including Saccharomyces boulardii, plus some herbs. I'm taking Japanese knotweed and Chinese skullcap, and I'm taking some advanced silver extract. So I'm doing that as well. And when I'm done with this advanced RNA silver extract, I'm going to switch over to silver hydrosol. Because silver nanoparticles have been shown to kill a lot of things, including Lyme disease, including COVID even. So I'm doing that. And then I'm taking good anti-inflammatories. I'm taking resveratrol and curcumin. I'm so thankful that I don't have any kind of a bad reaction to resveratrol and curcumin. I met somebody yesterday who told me that she got a severe reaction. She took one curcumin pill and she got very, very sick. She got nausea and vomiting, and so she never took it again. I said, maybe you don't eat curry, because you know that curcumin is extract of turmeric and there's plenty of turmeric in curry. So anyway, I'm very grateful that I can take those, because interleukin-6 is a cytokine. It's an inflammatory compound that will rise in your body when you have various conditions. It can rise during COVID, it can rise during Lyme disease, and it can rise when you have autoimmune conditions. So again, we're not entirely sure what the root of this is. We're making good hypotheses based on what has been happening. And so again, it's up and down. Today is a good day, although I feel sluggish and tired today, but I have no headache. I had no shaking today. It's raining and yucky today. So it's a day that one might feel a little logy anyway. Do you feel logy today?
I feel logy. Well, yeah, it's a low pressure system.
Right. So it's a
so everybody pressure. Was logy, and I had a light attendance in spin class.
Is
this
that
morning,
a fact?
Yeah, that's kind of common. Whenever I see a big low come in, lots of rain, I find the attendance a little bit lower at the
gym. Is that a bit? Because it's Monday morning and people get out
first,
of bed.
Yeah, it's first thing in the morning.
They try to get out of bed and they're like, nope.
Nope. You go, nope, bed's good. Thank
yes,
you.
I know. I had trouble this morning as well. I didn't go for a walk. Of course, it was raining. I have it in my head that if it clears up a little bit later and I have time, I will go for a walk, although I have physical therapy today, which I'm looking very much forward to. And so in terms of my orthopedics, again, orthopedics are pretty good. The knee is still kind of sore. I was able to ride my bike last Wednesday, and I rode on the trainer because it was raining last Wednesday, and I rode for 8 miles in about 36 minutes, and that was nice. Unfortunately, on Friday, I got symptoms again. So this is a phenomenon that has a few names. It can be called post-exertional malaise, and it can be called post-exertional symptom increase. There's a few acronyms for it. I mean, post-exertional malaise is the classic term that's used for chronic fatigue, myalgic encephalomyelitis chronic fatigue syndrome, which I hesitate to say that I have. I mean, like I said, I have some kind of chronic inflammatory something that I have to manage. I don't think of it as chronic fatigue because when I have good days, I'm really not tired. My fatigue can be managed and I'm able to mostly do my life. The thing that gets me is the symptoms. So I'm starting to think it might be a migraine phenomenon, which I was thinking 2 years ago as well, because I have what appears to be prodrome. The prodrome starts, and prodrome, when you have migraine, can start in a lot of ways. Prodrome you can see lights, and classically you have changes in your visual field, and you can see lights in front of your eyes. What I might get a bit light sensitive, but I don't see anything in front of my eyes. I don't have changes in my visual field. But what does happen is my appetite starts to subtly decrease. That's what happens. Like I'll have a meal and I won't be able to finish the meal. And that's a warning sign. And then the next morning I may wake up and I'll have my what we call titubations, the head shakes and the body shakes. More often head shakes than body shakes, but sometimes body as well. And then if it's going into sort of a migraine phenomenon, the shakes will stop and I'll get a headache. And the next morning, if it is sort of that migraine phenomenon, it'll be accompanied by nausea. So that's what I'm thinking. I have this starting signal, then it's followed by nausea and shaking, and then it's followed by a headache. That sounds like a migraine to me. And I'll discuss it with my physical therapist today because she has migraines, and I'll say, what do you think? What does that sound like? And so because I was thinking it was migraines, it's probably not isolated migraines. It's migraines as a result of all this other stuff, because migraines are a result of mitochondrial dysfunction. And so you be nice to your mitochondria and you can get out of your migraines better. So how do you be nice to your mitochondria? Well, you have to rest. You have to do restorative activities, which I do. I did a lovely restorative yoga class last night with my favorite Angie at Yono. That was great. And this morning I did some nice yoga online with Cassandra. That was very nice as well. And then, you know, you do the best as you can to keep your stress levels down, your cortisol down. You have to, you know, watch your caffeine, watch your sugar. So caffeine can help to take you out of a migraine, but it can also, you have too much caffeine ongoing, it can make you more likely to get migraines. And so you watch your sugar. I've been watching my sugar, not eating zero, but having a lot less caffeine, having a lot less, maybe a few sips of iced tea in a day, and that's it, which makes it, because I make fresh iced tea, I wind up throwing half of it out, unfortunately, because it goes bad in the fridge. It's unfortunate. So I'm really watching that. The other thing I did, so I was having a headache on, it was Saturday evening, I felt headachy. So that night, I took some herbs that are directly aimed at migraines, which I haven't done before. And that plus I did a special restorative yoga practice that was directly for migraines. So I did those two things and then my headache went away. It was really wonderful. And so the herbs that I took, it was a combination of butterbur and feverfew. And butterbur and feverfew, if you look at the studies are, you look at various resources for information around butterbur and feverfew for migraines. And it's really... the information is sort of shaky, and yet people take butterbur and feverfew and they feel better. So the things you take prophylactically for migraine, you can take butterbur and feverfew prophylactically if you want to. I don't want to do that because it's a direct anti-inflammatory. What I'd rather do prophylactically for migraines is things that are good for you anyway. So the big thing is magnesium. You make sure you take extra magnesium. And I take magnesium anyway. I've been taking magnesium right along for years for a lot of things. I mean, you take magnesium if you're an athlete and you want to keep your muscles soft and you want to keep your nerves functioning the way you want to. And magnesium is a great cofactor for various neurotransmitters, including serotonin. And magnesium is wonderful for keeping your muscles functioning in a normal fashion, so that they're not too tight and not too loose. Makes your nerves function well, and it also helps your digestive system. So it helps any muscle in your body, including your heart, including your digestive system. If you have Lyme disease, one of the things you can get is palpitations, which I've had a small amount of. Thankfully, I have a lot of motherwort tincture. So motherwort is a wonderful herb that you can use. Motherwort is calming. It's a nervine, and it's also calming and regularizing to heart rhythm. So it's a great herb for people who are anxious, who have palpitations, who have high blood pressure. It's a really good herb, and I have a lot of it because a dear friend made me a whole bunch of it from local fresh, organically grown, unsprayed, great soil motherwort. So I'm very pleased to have this motherwort. And so I'm taking, as much as a tablespoon a day if I need it. Probably I start with a quarter to a half a teaspoon in the morning, and then if I need more, I just take it throughout the day because I have it. It's great. Thank you, Amy. So that really helps. The other interesting thing is amoxicillin. It depends what you read. Amoxicillin doesn't say on it that it can cause palpitations or cardiac symptoms. It says that there are no cardiac symptoms associated with it, and yet some people report that they have that. So I don't know if that's going on. The other thing I read is that amoxicillin can cause some agitation and anxiety, which can lead to palpitations and heart symptoms. So I'm going to finish the course of amoxicillin. So I'm going to manage the heart symptoms while I'm doing that with hawthorn and motherwort and magnesium and yin yoga and deep breathing and chilling out and stuff like that. What's very, very unfortunate is that I tried to ride my bike again last Wednesday, and 2 days later I started to have symptoms. And that's this post-exertional syndrome that you can get. And post-exertional malaise. So the word malaise means, that's a word that means you don't feel like doing stuff. But where fatigue is physically your body, you're too tired to do things. You feel physically tired, you feel like you want to sleep, you feel like you want to rest, you don't want to do anything. Malaise is more of a brain thing. I don't feel like doing anything. That's malaise. So, but the term is used for people who have myalgic encephalomyelitis, chronic fatigue syndrome. And they use it to mean that you exert yourself, and you might exert yourself by having a stressor, by getting exercise, by pushing yourself harder than your body can handle. And then you get symptoms afterwards, and they can be migraines and fatigue. Fatigue can be so bad that you can't get out of bed. I am very fortunate in that doesn't happen to me, but I definitely can get symptoms. And like I said, that I will get the head shakes, sometimes nausea, sometimes headache, and those are the main symptoms that I get, and it makes it so that it's hard for me to function. I'm very fortunate having a good day today. So I took that MigraEase, and the MigraEase has butterbur and feverfew in it. The other thing that I added, so butterbur and feverfew I like to take as needed. And that's what I tend to recommend because they're kind of powerful. They're direct anti-inflammatories, and they really tend to take out a headache. If you have a headache, they're a good thing to take. What I like to take ongoing for migraines, and what I recommend to my patients, is to take high-dose riboflavin. And so I wasn't taking that for a long time. I had taken it for a long time. I wasn't getting any migraine phenomenon, so I stopped taking it. But now that it seems that I am, I decided to start taking it again. So I'll take it for a long time until I can get back on my bike and not have symptoms. and have that go on for a long time and then may come off it. I'll see. Because I noticed that my patients who I recommend magnesium and riboflavin to for migraines, they seem to take it for a while and then they stop. And I will ask them, so are you having migraines? And they'll say, no. So, you know, if you go through some changes in what you're doing and you stop getting migraines, then you can go ahead and perhaps try stopping to taking a supplement. Right now, I want to dig myself out of this, and I want to see, again, if I can do this without taking pharmaceuticals. I'm not beyond taking pharmaceuticals. I took naproxen when I was in a lot of pain, but I haven't had to take naproxen in more than a month, I think. So I haven't had any pain that warranted it, although one could argue perhaps the headaches. But again, headaches are often better with ibuprofen and aspirin. And, you know, there's a popular migraine remedy that you can get over the counter, and it contains aspirin, acetaminophen, and caffeine. Caffeine acutely can help with migraines because it helps. There's a vasodilation that happens that gives you the pain. And if you can help to calm that down, the caffeine will cause a bit of vasoconstriction so that it calms it down. And then the aspirin and the ibuprofen the aspirin is an anti-inflammatory that's in the migraine remedy, and then acetaminophen is not an anti-inflammatory, it's an analgesic, it reduces pain. So I had a suggestion from my PT, why don't you try taking that remedy, and if it works, you know you have a migraine. I didn't really want to go get it because I don't want to use that ongoing. I preferred to take the Butterbur and Feverfew, which I would not mind taking ongoing. And after I took that Butterbur and Feverfew and also did the special restorative yoga, headache went away. It was wonderful. I was able to eat. It was very nice. Butterbur and Feverfew, something to try if you have a migraine, in my opinion. I didn't have physical therapy last week because God bless Olga. She wasn't feeling well, so I'm going to have it today. I'm looking forward to that. You know, this leg, my leg with the bum femoral nerve is getting better and better. It's getting stronger and stronger. I've been able to actually support my weight on it. Today I did a yoga flow where I did Warrior 3, and Warrior 3 is where you balance on one leg, and I was able to do it. I was very happy about that. So this leg is getting stronger and stronger. The femoral nerve is coming back. I still have paresthesia on the side of the leg, and Olga thinks that's because I have tight fascia, so I'm sure she'll work on that today. And I have soreness in this knee. Again, she thinks it's tight fascia on that side as well. But I'm able to do most of my yoga. I did, you know, yoga poses today and was very happy about it. I just need to not push myself. And unfortunately, I'm not going to try to get on the bike again until probably October, because usually when I get into inflammatory place, if it's a bad inflammatory place, 2 months, that's what it takes. And I don't want to get myself in a situation this week, because next week I'm going to Florida and I really want to go to Florida and see my mom.
You should go to Florida and see your mom.
Florida and see
my
mom.
Yeah, you really should.
Why?
Because it would be good for you.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe us. No offense, dear.
Why?
Oh, no. I think it's just a really good thing. You just really need that time right now.
I need some downtime.
I think you do.
Yeah, okay.
I think you do.
All right. I'm sorry if I'm
No,
Dad
wasn't
you.
Supposed to go there.
Oh.
Just relax.
Yeah.
It's okay.
One of the things that you get into, so this is, we'll just touch on this. One of the things you get concerned about is if you have a partner, and this partner is taking very, very good care of me. he really does, and because I keep checking in with him and saying, I feel so bad. I don't feel like I'm a good partner because I have this ongoing stuff. And he says, stop it. You're just ill. It's okay. And he makes me soup. And it's wonderful. And
I do make you soup.
Makes me really good soup.
I make you soup. Really? I make you fish. I make you salads. I make you all sorts of good things.
Bowls.
We had bowls last night.
Yeah.
Bowls are like my new favorite. I just really like making bowls.
He likes bowls.
And you can make them any way you want. You can make a Mexican bowl. You can make, I think we may, depending on my time tonight, we may have a salmon bowl tonight.
Right.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you don't have time, we don't have to do it tonight.
Yeah, I make you nice stir fries.
Yeah.
I make all sorts of good things.
Well, the rice and the quinoa are already made.
Right.
So that's good. I mean, we could have stir fry too. Whatever's easy, it's fine. Because we have plenty of soup. I'm happy to eat the soup. It's really fine. So, okay. So that's the latest. And I'm not going to try to get on the bike until I get back from Florida because I don't want to give myself post-exertional anything before I'm about to go to Florida. Yeah.
Please, no.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. All right. So let's see where we're at. All right. So I'm going to talk about the health benefits of a couple things that are good for you that help to calm you down. And then if we have time, we're going to get into some herbs for Lyme disease. Okay. So let's talk about the health benefits of Epsom salts. So Epsom salt is basically magnesium sulfate. It can be used as a supplement. It can be used in your bath. It can be used topically on your body as a beauty product and has very few side effects. And it's a remedy for a lot of ailments. People use it for all sorts of health problems, especially muscle soreness and stress. And it's cheap. It's easy to use. And it's harmless when you use it the right way. And so there are some side effects, which we'll talk about. So it's basically magnesium sulfate. That's what it is. It's a chemical compound made of magnesium, sulfur, and oxygen, and that's it. Epsom salt is, it's called, so you have to be careful of the word salt. When we think of salt, salt that you sprinkle on your food is sodium chloride. But the word salt in chemistry basically means something that comes together when you chemically react an acid and a base. And I'm assuming that, I'm not sure what you react for to make Epsom salts, but magnesium sulfate is probably, you combine magnesium hydroxide with possibly hydrogen sulfide or sulfuric acid. It's probably when you combine magnesium hydroxide with sulfuric acid, you get Epsom salts, and that's the salt. It's a compound that comes out and usually is a powder at room temperature and a solid at room temperature, and it's a result of reacting an acid and a base. So it could be anything and when you take chemistry class, they'll tell you, okay, if you react these two compounds, this acid and this base, what's the salt that you get? And it could be calcium sulfate, it could be potassium sulfate, it could be, there's a lot of things that are considered to be salts. And so potassium chloride and a lot of chloride things, magnesium chloride, hydrochloric acid plus magnesium hydroxide, you're going to get magnesium chloride. So so Epsom salt, it's a salt only because it's the result of reacting an acid and a base. It's not sodium chloride, and there is no sodium chloride in it. And so it looks like table salts, and it gets dissolved in baths, and that's why people call it bath salt. And it doesn't taste like sodium chloride at all. And it's really bitter and unpalatable. Magnesium in general, anything with magnesium in it tends to be unpalatable. Anything with salt, any chemical, like a chemical powders, even if they're good for you, if they have magnesium in them, they tend to be unpalatable. Magnesium is very bitter. And anything with sulfur in it tends to be very bitter. So if you ever, you can buy MSM powder, methyl sulfonyl methane, which is a great form, a very absorbable form of sulfur. And it's a great anti-inflammatory, and it will help shore up all of your sulfur-bearing compounds in your body, like your collagen and your sulfur-bearing amino acids, like your N-acetylcysteine and your cysteine and methionine. And so it's a great source of sulfur, but it doesn't taste good. I bought magnesium sulfate, MSM powder, and I thought that I would throw it into things, and it tasted so bad I didn't do that. So Epsom salts have been used for hundreds of years. They use it for electrolyte abnormalities. It helps with constipation. It even has been used for eclampsia, which is an inflammatory condition that you get in pregnancy that involves high blood pressure and it's life-threatening. So it hasn't been entirely researched, but people use it and get benefit from it. And it's basically because of the magnesium that people don't get enough magnesium in general. Like, in order to get plenty of magnesium, you have to eat plenty of leafy greens and some nuts and seeds. And most people, if you're eating like a processed food diet, you're not going to get enough magnesium. So it's really common for people to not have enough magnesium in their bodies. So how does it work? It just releases magnesium and sulfate ions into the water. You dump the magnesium, the powder into the water, and then it comes apart and it releases magnesium and sulfate ions. And the idea is that the particles can be absorbed through your skin, which gives you some magnesium and sulfates. Although the evidence is not good that it is absorbed through the skin. And you can put it on your skin as a cosmetic. You can also put it on your skin, like if you have joint pain and body aches or nerve aches. Like I could put magnesium sulfate on my, in fact, I do have a magnesium sulfate liquid that I put on my, actually, I'm not sure if it's sulfate, it might be chloride. But you can use magnesium topically for pain. And you can get cream that has magnesium sulfate in it, and you can apply it to any sore joints, and some of it will get in. It doesn't get in great, but it will get in to an extent. And so there are a lot of health benefits of using Epsom salts. My thought about how Epsom salts work, because if you get into a magnesium sulfate bath, in other words, you fill your bathtub and you dump, say, 2 cups of Epsom salts into the bath and stir it around so it dissolves, you pretty much feel better as soon as you get into the bath. You suddenly feel relaxed, and you feel your muscles relax, and the pain tends to ease up. So if it wasn't getting in through your skin, what's it doing? Well, to me, it's pretty simple. You have nerve endings in your skin. If I touch you, you can feel that, right?
Yep, got that.
Right. So you have nerve endings in your skin. That's why you can feel me touching you.
Okay.
I keep touching.
That's your, it's my, yeah, you, you that, like it, to do that.
It's going from touching to mitchering.
Yes.
Anyway, so.
Often, I might add.
You get mitchering.
Often, yes.
So, anyway, so what's going on? Why do you feel better when you get in the magnesium sulfate bath? It's because simply you have nerve endings on your skin, and the magnesium is touching the nerve endings on your skin, and it's calming them down because magnesium is calming and regulating to nerves. So the nerve endings on your skin feel it, and so it tends to send a signal through the entire nerve. And so once you feel calmer in some of your nerves, the rest of your body pays attention to that, and until your head pays attention to that, your brain pays attention to it, and then says, oh, I feel more relaxed. I'm going to send out relaxing neurotransmitters, and off you go. So it's not so much that you're absorbing very much of magnesium, but it is touching your skin, and it's causing a relaxation effect to the nerve endings in your skin. And so that sends a reflex relaxation through your nervous system. That's my hypothesis. That makes sense to me. If we know that it's not particularly being absorbed through the skin, that's one way that it's working. The sulfur, so the thing with sulfur is an anion, which means that it's negatively charged. So if there's any positively charged inflammatory compounds close to the surface, it's going to work on those. I don't know how much it's going to do. If there are any cationic substances, it's possible that the magnesium sulfate is going to pull some of that out of your body. We tell people who are having Herxheimer reactions, that who are having an increased inflammation. So Herxheimer reaction, you've probably heard me talk about this before. When you have Lyme disease or syphilis or any infection where you're taking an antimicrobial and you're breaking down the microorganisms from the antimicrobial, you can have a dumping of endotoxins, toxins that are inside the bacteria or virus or whatever it is you're breaking down, into your body. And if your body can't get rid of them as fast as they're being broken down, you can get symptoms from those endotoxins being present. Well, Epsom salt baths are one of the things we tell people to do. So, of course, it's going to, as I said, relax the nervous system. And the other thing is that I think the sulfur, which I said is anionic, the sulfur may be sitting on the skin and helping to draw some stuff out through the skin. If there's any inflammatory compounds through the skin in the capillaries, there it might be drawing some of that stuff out. There is some evidence that it can do that. That's probably what's going on. So if there are inflammatory compounds in your body, you do have capillaries that go to your skin, the surface of your skin, and it might a little bit of that might be coming out. It's not 100% proven, but it's a hypothesis that I have that makes sense because inflammatory compounds tend to be positively charged. Sulfur, as I said, is an anion. It's negatively charged, so it can tend to pull stuff out of the body. And we always tell people, you know, one of the things you do if you're very sore, if you have a lot of inflammation, if you have a Herxheimer reaction, get in an Epsom salt bath. So the other thing is interesting. So did you know that magnesium is the fourth most abundant mineral in your body? The first most abundant mineral in your body is calcium. And magnesium is involved in over 300 biochemical reactions that benefit your heart and your nervous system. So it's super important, and people don't get enough. You can take magnesium as a supplement, but I don't recommend taking magnesium sulfate internally. I mean, if you take too much magnesium sulfate, it'll have a laxative effect. When I have people take magnesium supplements, I have them do different salts of magnesium. My favorite one overall is probably magnesium glycinate or magnesium glycinate malate, because magnesium glycinate will cross the blood-brain barrier, has malic acid in it, which is calming to your muscles. And it's not super expensive. The magnesium L-threonate is a really good one. If you really need, really have anxiety and you really want to calm your brain down, magnesium L-threonate is the way to go. But magnesium L-threonate can be pricey. So so I like magnesium glycinate because it gets in. It doesn't tend to, I mean, if you take enough of it, it'll make you go to the bathroom. But it's not as laxative as magnesium chloride or certainly as magnesium oxide can be. It tends to be well absorbed. Magnesium sulfate, as I said, that magnesium sulfate is not very well absorbed, which means that if you take it, it's going to make you, it's going to help with constipation. Let's put it that way. If you take too much of it, it's going to really help with constipation. So you have to be careful that way. There are some research where they put people in an Epsom salt bath, and they found that the magnesium levels in their body were higher after they got into the Epsom salt baths, although it wasn't a great study and there was no control group. There are a few studies that have evaluated the effects of Epsom salts on magnesium levels, but they have questionable results. So again, I don't know that the benefits from Epsom salts are really from absorbing the magnesium. I think it's more from the sulfur is drawing inflammatory compounds out, and the magnesium is actually sitting on the skin and calming the nervous system down. When you have a calmer nervous system, your cortisol comes down. You don't have to deal with as much cortisol, puts you into parasympathetic mode, which helps your body to go into rest and digest, which is going to help you to detoxify more. So Epsom salt baths, you know, magnesium is important for sleep and stress management because magnesium is involved in making neurotransmitters that help with sleep and stress, like serotonin. So if you don't have enough magnesium, you're not going to sleep as well. You're going to be more stressed out, which is not good. So Epsom salt baths can help. Again, I don't think there's a suggestion that it's because you're absorbing magnesium through the skin, but I don't think that's true. It's like I said, it's relaxing your nervous system. And there is a thought that taking a warm bath relaxes you anyway, whether you have magnesium in it or not. Magnesium is often used to treat constipation because it draws water into your colon, which helps to promote bowel movements. Most magnesium that's taken by mouth is usually you take either citrate, hydroxide, or oxide. You could do Epsom salts as well, and the FDA does approve it as a laxative, and it can be taken by mouth with water according to the directions. Make sure it's an Epsom salt that's meant for internal consumption if you're going to do that. I don't really recommend it. Enough magnesium to help you go to the bathroom, my preference is magnesium citrate. and you do a dose that you have to titrate up the dose that works for you. I'm not big on taking magnesium sulfate by mouth. On the other hand, if you did take magnesium sulfate and you tolerated it, you're going to get the benefits of the sulfur, which is going to be detoxifying. But Epsom salts, that window is rough. And I find that with magnesium citrate, I find that magnesium citrate is somewhat absorbed. People definitely feel better when they take magnesium citrate. They do feel calmer when they ingest it. I have people who take magnesium citrate at bedtime, and they definitely feel happier and calmer when they do it, which means some of it is getting in. And again, with enough magnesium citrate, if you're constipated, it will help you go to the bathroom. And the way that magnesium helps with bowel movements, one, it's hygroscopic, which means when you take enough of it, you're going to draw water from your colon into your stool, which is going to make the stool softer and easier to pass. And it has another way of working, which is that if one of the mechanisms of your constipation is that your colon has tightness in the smooth muscle, if you take enough magnesium, it's going to calm those tight muscles, and you're going to get healthier peristalsis. You're going to just get more regular, even peristalsis, which is what you get in your entire body. Magnesium, when you ingest it, you're going to get calming and regular functioning of muscles and nerves through your whole body. And if you're constipated, it's going to help there as well. The other thing is, if you take enough magnesium to calm your body down, your cortisol is going to be lowered, and you're going to tend to be more constipated if you are stressed. If you tend toward constipation, if you're in high cortisol, you're going to be in fight or flight, and you're not going to have as good functioning or attention paid by your body to the parasympathetic nervous system. So you're going to tend to be more constipated. So getting adequate magnesium in is going to help with that. And, you know, of course, if you're going to use magnesium sulfate as a laxative, don't use it all the time. If you can take magnesium all the time, like I said, there's better magnesiums to take. And the other way to get magnesium in is to eat leafy greens, you know, to eat green vegetables that have chlorophyll in them. And chlorophyll at the center of the molecule has magnesium in it. So I'm talking with my hands. If you can see me on Facebook and Instagram, I'm doing a little dance with my hands. I think I should learn ASL.
Yes.
I know some ASL. Thank you. But I don't know much else. If you want to learn a little bit of ASL, you can watch Only Murders in the Building, because there's a character on there that speaks ASL. And, well, actually two, because, you know, this guy, Theo, he speaks ASL to Mabel. And Mabel knows a little ASL as well. But he can read lips too. All right. Exercise performance and recovery. So Epsom salt baths, great thing to do after a heavy workout. We need a better bathtub. It's great for muscle soreness and cramps. Once again, that magnesium is touching the surface of your skin, calming those muscles down, calming those nerves down, and you get a relaxation response. You need adequate magnesium because magnesium also increases the availability of glucose in your blood, muscles, and brain. So people tend to be magnesium deficient. They're going to tend to be more towards metabolic syndrome and not have good blood sugar control. And magnesium can also reduce the accumulation of lactic acid in your muscles. So you get less DOMS, less delayed onset muscle soreness. If you take supplements, it'll help you with the insufficiency. And athletes, ready for this? We're prone to low magnesium levels, so health professionals recommend you take supplements. You're taking magnesium, right?
Yes, okay, every day.
Good.
Twice a day.
Very good. It's important for exercise. The use of the bath salt to enhance fitness is not well researched. But again, if you have soreness, you're going to get in the bathtub, and the magnesium is going to calm your muscles and nerves so that you feel better that way. Epsom salt supposedly can reduce pain and swelling. There are people who report that if they have fibromyalgia, it helps their symptoms of fibromyalgia and arthritis. And they say it's because of the magnesium. because people with fibromyalgia and arthritis tend to be deficient. And there was a study on women with fibromyalgia who applied magnesium chloride to their skin, which showed that it could be better for reducing symptoms, but it wasn't a great study. So again, if you're talking about fibromyalgia, if you have fibromyalgia or arthritis or, you know, chronic pain, and you get in an Epsom salt bath and you feel better, again, it's probably because that magnesium is sitting on your nerves and you're getting a reflexive nerve response so that your nerves calm down so that you have less pain. And the other thing you have is that you've got that sulfur sitting on your skin, possibly drawing inflammatory chemicals. If you have fibromyalgia, you have chronic inflammation. If you have arthritis, any kind of arthritis, whether it's an inflammatory arthritis or degenerative arthritis, there is still some inflammation. When you have bones and structures rubbing against each other, you're going to have some kind of inflammatory response. So anything you can do to reduce inflammation is going to help with that. So Epsom salts are generally safe. There are some negative effects. If you take too much all at once, it can send you running for the bathroom for number two. You can get diarrhea, bloating, or an upset stomach. If you're going to take it, make sure you drink a lot of water and don't do more than the recommended dose. If you take way too much, it can lead to heart problems and alter mental status. You have to really, really take a lot of it, though. I mean, usually magnesium, the thing with magnesium is you're going to get to a dose where you're going to be running for the bathroom before you're going to get to a toxic dose. So that's generally what happens. I mean, if you push it in really, really fast, or if you get an IV and you get way too much, that probably can happen. But that magnesium is generally safe. You know that your body's going to tell you if you've taken too much, and you're going to be running for the bathroom before you get to a toxic level. So Epsom salts, you know, we recommend about 2 cups in a bathtub. You can put the Epsom salt under running water if you want it to dissolve more quickly. So, like, you can take a sachet. The nice thing to do is you can get Epsom salts that have lavender in them, and that's a really great way to go. If your Epsom salt is just plain and you want lavender, you can get a little sachet, you know, a mesh bag, and put the Epsom salts in and put a few drops of lavender essential oil in. And then you tie it to the bath spigot and you run the water, and you have the water, the warm water, run over the sachet. So you have that running water, because it's agitated, it's going to dissolve in your bathtub faster. So you can dissolve it in a bath. Epsom salts is used as a beauty product for skin and hair. You can use it as an exfoliant, and you can massage it into your skin. I don't tend to do that, but that's something you can use. And supposedly it can help to cleanse pores too. And you can use it as a hair conditioner to add volume to your hair. That's interesting. That's really interesting. I'm not sure how it would do that, except maybe perhaps to lay more minerals on your hair so it gives it a bit of volume. Certainly you can use it as a laxative, but you have to be careful. What I tend to tell people with magnesium, if they're going to use magnesium to help them go to the bathroom, what I have them do is I start them with a low dose, and I have them gradually increase the dose every couple of days until they get some loose stool. And once they have the loose stool, I don't want them to have loose stool. I have them back off to the last dose that they took, where they had a normal daily bowel movement. And again, I don't tend to use Epsom salts for this purpose. I use magnesium citrate for that purpose. So it can be really helpful for constipation, and it can be helpful for calming you down. It's really great in a bath, and we've explained some mechanisms of how that is. Okay, so that's Epsom salts. So now let's talk about the benefits. This is leading up to Epsom salts. Let's go to float tanks, because float tanks have Epsom salts in them. So this float tanks are not quite the same as doing an Epsom salt bath. So flotation therapy, which is also known as isolation therapy or sensory deprivation therapy, you spend an hour or more floating peacefully in a 10-inch high water-filled floor with a flotation tank or float room. So yeah, it's a water and Epsom salt solution, which makes the water so buoyant that you're floating instead of sinking. So again, if you get in a float tank, If you decide to sit your butt on the floor of the float tank, it's only 10 inches of water. So it's only going to come up to maybe your waist. So you can sit. You don't have to float. But if you lay back, the amount of Epsom salt that is in the tank will allow you to float. Because what Angie tells me over at Yono is that there are 1,100 pounds of Epsom salts in each tank. Is that, that's what she said, right?
Yeah, it seemed like there was a lot.
Yeah. So it's a super saturated solution of Epsom salts. So you have this great sense of floating, and you get out of gravity. You take the gravity off your bones, joints, and your muscles. So this helps your circulation, allows your body to rejuvenate and heal. Floating measurably reduces your blood pressure and heart rate, and it also lowers your stress levels. And floating is really good for your brain, too. The sensory deprivation can slow your brain waves into the theta state, which is where, so people have a hard time getting into theta state. Theta state is the slow functioning of your brain waves that happens when you're in your stage D sleep. And the older you get, the harder it is to get into stage D sleep. But the float tank will help you to do that. That state is common during deep meditation or before falling asleep. And it can be combined with imagery, clear thoughts, inspiration, and release of endorphins. So float therapy has been proven to relieve stress, anxiety, and depression, help with chronic fatigue just from insomnia and jet lag. It can help you be more creative. It can help with mental clarity and learning. It can help to deepen your meditation practice. It certainly can help to soothe chronic pain from arthritis, fibromyalgia, back neck pain, inflammation, tendonitis. Help to improve your athletic performance just because if you're in the float tank, you're going to relax quicker and it's going to take away your DOMS faster. I was chatting with Angie yesterday and she said that she did a tough bike ride. She rode 30 miles and she went to stores in Coventry, mm-hmm. and she felt sore. And she said, "I'm going to go float tomorrow." I'm like, "Good job. That's a great thing for her to do." So if you get into a float tank, you're going to reduce the soreness in your muscles more quickly and help you to relax more. And because, again, you're going to draw some water out of you and some inflammatory compounds, you're going to replace that with this stuff, which is just plain old water.
Oh, that stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm, yeah.
So it's really important. I didn't say this before. I had said this before. Take an Epsom salt bath. It's a good idea to hydrate, because it will draw water out of your system, because you are osmotic, and the level of electrolytes in your blood is lower than the level of the electrolytes in the super saturated magnesium sulfate solution that's in the float tank. So water will traverse a semipermeable membrane, moving from an area of low concentration to an area of high concentration. So you're going to dehydrate to an extent when you're in a float tank. So it's very important to drink when you're done, and not just right after you get out, but when you throughout the day or days following. I mean, it's a good idea. If you're dealing with inflammation, hydrating is very important. I spend a lot of time drinking and running for the bathroom. Yeah. So I drink lots and lots of water. And one of the things you do when you're dealing with inflammatory conditions is drink. It's a very simple, good thing you can do, because when you hydrate, all of the systems of your body, your systems of detoxification, your liver, lymph, lymphatics, and kidneys, and digestive system all work much better if they're well hydrated. So float tanks can reduce blood pressure and help your circulation and accelerate healing and strengthen your immune system, just because, mostly because you're calming down. That's mostly why. So a float tank is a special kind of Epsom salt bath. It's still Epsom salts. That's just what it is. But when you do a bathtub in your house, you're probably going to put in 2 cups of Epsom salts. When you're in a float tank, there's 1,100 pounds. So you're not going to be floating in your bathtub unless you dump a ton of Epsom salts in, which is kind of a waste because it's way too much. When you're in a float tank, they have the Epsom salts in the water for you in a super saturated solution, and they have special filters that filter out impurities out. In fact, when you're done, you're almost done with your float tank, a voice comes on, an ethereal voice comes on and says, "All right, it's your float session is over. Please exit the tub because we're going to do the filtration now." So that's interesting. So flotation is something you can do, and there's float in various places. We have one in Willimantic, Yono, and there's a place in West Hartford that has flotation tanks, and you can probably find one near you. And it's I think it's worth trying because it is very relaxing, and you are going to feel better and detoxified and lower stress and all those things. When you get in the float tank, when you're in the, it's a pod, and you're in a private room. And so when you get in the tank, you can leave, you have a, there's a handle that you pull the float tank closed, and you don't have to do that. You can leave it ajar if you want to. If the idea of being enclosed in that tank is sort of claustrophobia inducing, you do not have to, you don't have to close it. You can close it as much as you want because it's hydraulically controlled. And then if you want to close it, there's a light inside. And if you don't feel like you're ready for having the lights off, you don't have it. The light switch is in a convenient, large, plushy button that you can push. And you can choose to push it or not. So you can keep the lights on. When I first closed the tank, I found that... it's a little humid in there because it's warm water, and the warm water is coming off the surface. And so I found it a little bit claustrophobia inducing. I did keep it closed for the whole hour, and but I alternated between having the light on and the light off. When I had the light off, I found that I started to get anxious, and that may happen to you. And if you do, again, you do whatever you need to do. It's a private room. You can get in and out. You have a whole hour. You can get in and out of the tub. The other thing that happens when you're in the float tank that can potentially happen is there's a thing called immersion diuresis. And I think I talked about this before.
Ooh, that doesn't sound good.
No, immersion diuresis is just when you're in water, you have hydrostatic pressure on all of your capillaries and your blood vessels. And so the immersion diuresis is going to push water, anything that's in the interstitium, it's going to go back into the capillaries. Once it goes into the capillaries, you've noticed if you're swollen and you get in water, you're less swollen when you get out. Well, there's a way that happens. Part of it is that water is going to be drawn from you by the Epsom salts. And the other thing that happens, as I said, is just the pressure of the water around you presses water into the capillaries. You have higher blood volume in the capillaries, and then that goes through your liver. I'm sorry, not your liver, your kidneys. And your kidneys go, okay, this is too much water. We're going to send this out. And so now you have to go to the bathroom, and you might find you really have to go to the bathroom. I asked the woman, what happens if I have to go to the bathroom in the middle of my session? She said, no problem. Just get out. There's a bathrobe for you. The bathroom's right around the corner. No problem. So that might happen. And you might have to make a decision if you want to get out of the tub and go to the bathroom, or just wait and see if you can hold it. You don't want to go to the bathroom in the tub. That's a very bad thing.
No.
But if you really have to go, you just get out and you go and you come back in. But be aware that that's something that can happen. And I'm not going to encourage you to not hydrate before you go in, because hydration is a really good thing in terms of detoxification. All right. So now let's talk about, I wanted to talk about just a few more things about... being well, and we just have a few more minutes, so I'm just going to talk about the health benefits of being outside. So getting back to nature and being outside, Mother Nature is having a hard time competing with screens. But we have this lovely yard. Right now the lovely yard is full of rain, and I think we're going to have lots of rain all day today. That's just how it's going to be today. But if you can get outside, it's really great for your physical and mental health. There's a lot of ways that it can be helpful. You don't have to spend hours at a time for the benefits to start. I mean, sitting in your yard for 10 minutes is going to help you. If you have a work day and you can get outside for a few minutes throughout the day, that can really help you. It can help you to feel better. And even if there's not greenery around, if you're in a city, just getting outside in the relatively fresh air can still be helpful. So let's see. So you breathe better when you're outside. So air pollution can trigger allergies and asthma, but indoor concentrations of air pollutions are 2 to 5 times higher than outdoor concentrations. So getting outside, you're going to get out of air pollutants that are inside wherever you are, whether it's your house or your office. And there is an association between local greenery and mortality risk. People with the least greenery in their neighborhoods don't fare as well as people with a lot of greenery. We are 34% less likely to die from respiratory diseases. Well, one of the reasons is all those beautiful trees that we have. I can see outside my windows that are being delightfully fed by the rain. All those, that green, that chlorophyll is putting oxygen into the air. If I go outside and I get in the trees, I'm going to breathe in that oxygen. I'm also going to breathe in phytonicides, which are phytochemicals that help to kill microorganisms. So that's a really good thing. And you know, I'm finding that this is a really important thing to talk about. So I think I'm going to shelve it and talk about it next time, because I really like this topic. I really like talking about being outside. And the next time I talk to you, I will have been to Florida and been outside there and gotten the healing from the sun that happens in Florida. So I'm going to wrap it up about. So benefits of Epsom salts, benefits of helping with migraines, riboflavin, butterbur, feverfew, stress reduction. Stress reduction is good for everything. So really helpful. Making sure you get enough magnesium in. All of those things are helpful. Epsom salts and float tanks, all good things. And get outside. Get outside. And I'll talk about why it's good to be outside next week. All right. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You can also leave questions or comments at my Facebook page, Twitter, and Instagram at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores and WHUS.org.